I think one of the biggest one is really coming together in community. There's more power when you come together. Because I know even just working with CEOs, right? They're surrounded by people, but not many who can understand what they go through.
And mostly yes men and women.
Yes. And yes. That's why they say, you know, it's lonely at the top.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the podcast, where we introduce you to incredible humans who share their journeys with the mission to inspire you to harness your own inner tenacity to drive your life and career forward. And now, your host, Adam Posner.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast, where I bring the best and the brightest in the world of business, marketing, and personal growth to help you harness your inner tenacity and drive your career forward. Folks, my guest today is Lan Fan, a renowned author, master trainer, and speaker who is celebrated for her expertise in purpose-driven leadership, mindset cultivation, and continuous personal and professional development. And her book, Do This Daily, Secrets to Finding Success, Happiness, and Purpose at Work and Life, is coming out in April, probably right about when this show is hitting your ears. She's a highly regarded consultant who provides invaluable insights and strategic advice to CEOs, top executives, and businesses navigating through the dynamic realms of business and innovation. And her influential digital presence, especially on LinkedIn and YouTube, gains tens of millions of views annually, making her a pivotal figure for leaders seeking inspiration, actionable guidance. Let's get to it. I am done reading this bio. Lan, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Adam. So excited to be here.
Awesome. Good stuff. So we were talking before about what this show is all about, and Lan said, how far back do you want to go? And I've been doing this thing for the last year with all my guests where I'm really interested in what folks' parents, their journeys, because it really lays the framework. And your parents being Vietnamese refugees, how did that influence your upbringing and education?
Yeah. So we came in the 70s, and literally when my parents came to the US, we left with the clothes on our backs. And so my father didn't work because he couldn't get any jobs. So even though he was this high profile, you know, not executive, but he was like worked for the government in Vietnam, when he came to the US, he couldn't even get a job sweeping floors.
Really?
And so my mom supported our family, five of us total, on her income. So first she used to fold laundry at, I don't know if you've ever been to the LAX, but there's that big dome in the middle, right? That used to be a restaurant. Mm-hmm. So she used to fold laundry, and I vividly remember her taking bags of like chocolate and candies, and I loved that job because, you know, but in terms of money, she was probably making $3 an hour or something back in the day. And then so she went to school, cosmetology school, and then she got her license to do hair and nail. And I think that's when, you know, it's funny because I was going through my mom's thing. My mom has dementia, and I was cleaning up her apartment years ago, and I was looking at all of her tax returns because she saved all of them, you know, since she was working, and she never made more than $15,000 a year. And she supported us all, like a family of five.
And somehow they did it, and you didn't know otherwise. No. But did did you ever look in school at like kids that had more? Did you ever feel envious? Did you ever?
So here's the thing. I grew up in Inglewood, California. And so everyone didn't have anything. Yeah. And this is Inglewood back in the 70s and 80s when it was Crips and Bloods and all this other stuff. But I ended up actually, because we, you know, there's no nannies or babysitters. So I grew up in my mom's nail and hair salon. So at the age of probably 10, 11, I started making money sweeping the floors, you know, the hair, whenever my mom mm-hmm. cut hair. And then one of the nail technicians taught me how to do acrylic nails. Mm. So at 13, I started to do people's nails. And people are, you know, always kind of are astonished when I tell them that, because, you know, they're like child labor laws.
Yeah, it didn't matter back then.
It was Reagan. It was the 80s. There was no regulation. And so I actually got really good, and I was making like, you know, like $100 a week. And
that's
one day I told my mom. Yeah. One day I told my mom, I think I want to do nails. And the day after, I never came back to the nail shop. And here's the thing. I didn't realize it till years later. I was watching a documentary with Quincy Jones. And his daughter had basically filmed her father. And Quincy Jones, as you know, is one of the most successful producers of all time.
Was this Rashida?
The Thriller. Yes, yeah. Rashida Jones. And Quincy talks about his time growing up in the south of Chicago, and how he was heading in the wrong direction. His father was in jail. His mother was in a mental institute. So he was selling drugs, getting in the wrong kind of environment. Mm. And one day he ran into a traveling musician, a saxophonist. And he was like, "You can make a living out of music?"
What?
And he was like, "Yeah." And that one change changed his life. And what he realized, and this quote stuck with me, is that what you see, you want to be. What you see, you want to be. And I think my mother realized that what I was seeing for a Vietnamese refugee growing up in LA is my only opportunity as a profession was to do nail and hair. And that's the reason why I stopped going to the shop after that. And then I just focused on school. Like, I would be dropped off at the public library, till it was closed, and I would go home. So I just kept on studying, and I eventually ended up going to Stanford University after that.
Did you get a scholarship, or how did you got a scholarship for Stanford?
Yes, I got a scholarship.
Did you, and there's a thing I've heard called, immigrant guilt, right? Did you feel that, like, you were leaving them in the dust? Or did you feel like, what was that relationship with your parents? Or were they just insanely proud of you?
No, there was no guilt, because I think it was a drive to get them out of poverty. But I first had to get myself out of poverty. So I was kind of on my own financially since I was 17. And so, my parents didn't pay for, I still had to work while I was in college to pay other bills and all this other stuff. Even though I got a scholarship, it wasn't a full scholarship. Right. So I still had to work.
Interesting. So you come out of school, and we were talking beforehand. What was that first job?
So it's interesting.
We're going to hit the back button here, because you said you don't talk about
really
it much.
Going the way
and
back.
That's what we do on the podcast. We talk about the life journey. This is a whole, this is your life, Lamfam.
I never go this far. Usually.
We take it there.
So actually, my senior year of college, my one goal was just to make a lot of money, right? I just make a lot of money, support my family. During this time, my father had passed away, though. So it was just my mother. So I wanted to really help my mother, right? And so I was going to go to law school because, I didn't know much. I was just like, how can I make the most money? So I was like, go to law school. And this is before tech, because this was like in the 90s. And then I ended up staying. I graduated in 3, but then I ended up staying an extra year to do my master's thesis. And I ended up writing about Southeast Asian gangs. Hmm. And as part of that, I had to do kind of like an internship. So my first
job, the triads?
No, not triads, the Southeast Asian gangs. And I ended up actually working with Southeast Asian gangs in East Oakland. And these kids were like maybe anywhere between 11 to 13. And that just blew my mind, because I realized that there's so many people who needed help, and all they needed, that once again, what you see, you want to be. And so I changed my major, and I ended up getting my master's in teaching curriculum, and eventually went to Harvard for my master's in teaching and curriculum.
Well, kudos to you for pulling yourself up and into this. But I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I sense this theme around the word community, and you still do, and you've done a ton of work in the element of community. But I want to talk about that element of community and gangs, and why so many youth, especially in inner cities, are drawn for that sense of community. And the word community, yes, gangs are not great, but correct me if I'm wrong, like, is there an element of positivity about them? Like, is it like, could we pull a thread out of that?
No, definitely. I mean, the reason why poor little Southeast Asian gangs or Crips and Bloods back in LA come together, it's the same reason why we come together as professionals, right? And it's funny, because fast forward 20, 30 years, my specialty became building communities. And I realized that the reason why I was so passionate about it was, and this is, I'll circle back and answer your question.
Sure.
Was that when we came to the United States and we had nothing, literally nothing, it was the churches and the, our community that came together and fed us and clothed us. And that's the same reason these Southeast Asian gangs come together, or gangs in general.
Family for kids who didn't have family.
Yeah, it's protection. It's like
support,
you know, a bigger purpose. And that's the same reason why, and it's ironic that as I got older, I started working and creating executive communities, CEOs, founders, CMOs. And it's the same reason.
So what would you say is a core commonality between a Southeast Asian gang and a community of executive senior leaders?
I think one of the biggest one is really coming together in community. There's more power when you come together. Because I know even just working with CEOs, right? They're surrounded by people, but not many who can understand what they go through.
And mostly yes, men and women.
Yes. And that's why they say, you know, it's lonely at the top, right? And so a lot of these CEOs, they come home, but their family don't really understand, you know, what they're going through. They are in positions where their teams are looking up to them, and they feel like they can't show weakness. Once again, just like the gangs, and these kids, right? They can't show weakness. But when they come together, you know, as a community, they have power. They have strength. It's the same thing with why other leaders come together later in life.
I love that. I love that. And it's definitely the first time I've asked that question on the podcast. It's a we made that connection, and we see that thread in your career trajectory, going from teaching to, the work with the gangs, and then you got into the ad industry over at McCann. And why the ad industry? What called you into that space?
So, circle back a few years before that, actually started, I was a serial entrepreneur. So after teaching, I went into the music industry and I created my this company, yes, Hype Agency. And so we were a booking agency. We booked artists in the first Coachella. The first two Coachellas, we probably booked like 5-10% of the artists, Bonnaroo, et cetera. And we were doing that morphed into music placements, into commercials and advertising.
So the marketing side.
And
of it, right?
So the marketing side. And that kind of is what led me. And then I left the music industry. And that's how I got into marketing and advertising.
Was it hard for you to transition at that time from being an entrepreneur, starting something, to working for somebody else? Or was it more necessity?
I think I was just in the stage of my life where I wanted something big. I had basically self-taught myself how to do a lot of these things, and I needed a bigger organization to kind of understand, well, how does it work outside of the grit and hustle, right? So I think I needed it.
But was it hard for you to report to somebody else, to report up to somebody else, like have a boss? I mean, that's why I left. I could never go back to that's why I work for myself. I can't. Yes, I have clients, but they're not my bosses. I could fire them. Yes. They could fire me, but that's a difference. You could fire a client.
Now, today, yes. But I had also started my entrepreneurial journey in my 20s.
I was about
to
say.
And so I needed that. I needed the decade or two decades of working for someone to kind of get where I am now. Right.
Yeah. I say that all the time to folks. I launched my own business about 7 years ago, and I don't think I could have done it with the success that I have much earlier. I don't think I could have done it in my 20s or my early 30s. I didn't have that experience. I didn't have the maturity. I didn't have that discipline and that drive. I didn't have it, and I need it. So let's talk about now, what you're up to. And everyone could check out Lan's LinkedIn for her full trajectory. But what's your day job?
Yeah, so I'm the CEO and founder of Community of Seven. So I founded Community of Seven at the height of the pandemic. Let's say I was forced to. Let's be honest. So I had been working at Fortune magazine. I'd gotten hired at the end of 2019 by Alan Murray, the CEO of Fortune. To build, so I was a serial entrepreneur as well. Mm-hmm. So after my entrepreneurial state and being in marketing, I then became what I call a serial entrepreneur, building startups within companies. And my specialty was building executive communities for these companies. And so Alan had recruited me to build this startup within Fortune. We were supposed to, I had a multi-billion dollar budget, was supposed to hire a team of 100 and basically create this startup from nuts to bolts within 6 months. So if anyone has ever built a company, that's ambitious. But we were getting there. I got to hire number 5. Then COVID happened. And then I got laid off. And what's worse, I had to lay off my entire team. So I sunk into this. Yes, I sunk into this depression. And I was like, I realized that I had defined my self-worth based on my work for so long. And who was I without a job? And I had never gotten laid off. I've never, you know, had that feeling of not being chosen. And so I just, you know, wore the same sweatpants for like weeks.
Most of us did.
Didn't get out of bed. Yeah, didn't get out of bed. Was crying uncontrollably. And then one day it was my daughter, who was 5 at that time, Morgan, just shaking me. She's like, "Mommy, I love you even without a job." And something about that shook me out of this. Like, okay, I need to get up. I need to take a shower. Yeah, and I need
to get my shit together.
I need to get my shit together. And so I just slowly, I think what really helped me was realizing that I was more than my job. I was, you know, and I think the focus on shifting and realizing that I needed to help others was the big pivotal moment. And so what I started doing was just, and, you know, this sounds crazy, but I focused on the 5 girls that were laid off. And I was like, "We're going to meet every week. And until I find you your next job or I build That's my powerful. Business and I hire you back." So I woke up with this name, Community of 7, because there was five of the girls, me, and my daughter would join our Zoom calls every week to kind of help them find their jobs. So that was the first Community of 7. And then what I tell my executive clients is that 7 is the ideal number for meetings. If you go past 7, you lose its productivity by 10% each person you add. So that's a professional reason. But the real reason was the story of how Community of 7 formed was me trying to help these girls find their next jobs. And so, you know, I'm building a business. I'm literally building a plane while I'm flying it. I don't know what it is. I just have a name. I don't have any budget because it was a lot easier for me as an entrepreneur. Yeah. And I just got laid off, you know, living off my severance. And so for marketing, what I started to do was just post daily online. And I started posting on LinkedIn because that's what I felt most comfortable. I'm not much of an Instagram or Facebook kind of person. And so I just posted daily. And at first, it was just my brother that liked it and some friends. And then eventually, and I was posting as Community of 7, not myself. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, that grew to about 250,000 followers. And then a few years later, I started posting as myself, Lan Fan, on LinkedIn, and grew that to where it's now, which is like close to 120,000. And then I started posting on other platforms as well. And it was just daily content, daily motivation. Like, how do I help the people reading this content? Which kind of helped me form, you know, write my book, Do This Daily, which is in kind of the same format, but also kind of helped me guide my next path. Because at first I started Community of 7 as a membership community because that's what I knew. But what I realized that what I really wanted to do was train and educate. So full circle, I had left teaching and building curriculum 25 years ago and went into marketing and worked with executives. And now, 25 years later, I'm back in teaching and curriculum.
Full circle.
So I go into companies and I do leadership development. I do so at scale. So I train sometimes teams of 300, 400 virtually, sometimes in person. I just did a one for MMC, it's the Omnicom agency, and they had 170 of their employees. And I talked about mindset and skill set. And I refound my passion. So going back 20 years ago, I didn't know I was going to go back into teaching, right?
It's these threads, these seeds that we plant, they just take a long time to sprout and they come back. It's just beautiful to watch at this stage of our career and life.
Exactly. You're becoming who you are. I always say that we're chiseling away at the things we're not, and that society tells us we should be, and we were becoming more of who we authentically are.
Hey, everybody, I want to talk about a product and platform that I absolutely love and our latest sponsor, Interseller, the prospecting and outreach platform of choice for recruiters and sellers. Whether you're doubling down on business development or recruiting talent, Interseller does all the heavy lifting of finding contact data, automating the email and follow-up process, and syncs all that rich data into 20-plus CRM and ATS platforms. Reach out now and get going on a 2-week free trial and let them know you heard about it from Adam on the podcast today. Check out the link on the website. Appreciate it.
I want to double back to something, and when you were at the peak of your pandemic depression, and we talk about self-limiting beliefs and self-doubt, and what did you learn about yourself and you battling your own self-doubt and self-limiting beliefs that you've now learned and that you teach to others? Because let's also, how do you define a self-limiting belief? Like, is it I can't do this because X, Y, and Z, but I really can? Like, what are those barriers that are really, you know, putting those walls up from us moving forward and succeeding?
I mean, I think it just starts with the I can't and I don't, right?
Take away those
I'm not
words.
Capable of. And here's the thing is that it's not static. You know, like, you're not born confident. No one is born confident. You gain confidence through mastery. And I think sometimes when we feel knocked down, we start losing our confidence, because you look at any kid, they're confident. Like, until the world gets to them. Yeah, I can be a doctor. I can be anything they want to be. But then the world starts knocking them down. And I think that's what happens to us. So, you know, I've been in terms of my waves and peaks, because, you know, I've struggled with confidence and believing in myself. And then, you know, I always think about my college years. And I'll circle back to answer your question. I'm tying it together. But in my college year, when I first got to Stanford, it wasn't all roses. I was like, I almost quit my freshman year half a dozen times. And I remember one time I was crying to one of my friend, Jose, and I was like, I don't know why I got into Stanford. I shouldn't have gotten here. You know, I was competing with kids from Exeter, kids who had private tutors, and I was like, I was out of my element. And he just gave me a hug, and the next day in my dorm room, I looked underneath, and there was a card from him, and there was just a quote, and it was a Toni Morrison quote: "If you want to fly, you got to give up the shit that weighs you down." And that just, it was such a powerful moment, because I realized all of this insecurity, all of this, I'm just this poor kid from LA that I can't do this. I needed to let that shit go. Other moment that happened to me, once again in my freshman year, was I started taking psychology classes. And in one of my psychology classes, we read Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. For those of you that don't know Viktor Frankl, he was a Holocaust survivor. And he saw his family, his parents murdered, massacred. And he wondered why some people in the concentration camp just gave up and died. I mean, not died, they were killed, of course, but just gave up. And some thrived, right? And there's a quote in his book that I remember highlighting over and over again. And it was this: in between the stimulus, which is what happens to us, right, and our response, is a space. In that space lies our freedom and our power. And in our response lies our happiness and growth. And I realized at that moment that what was happening wasn't happening to me, it was happening for me. And my response, in terms of what I thought mentally and what I did physically, would impact my life. That I wasn't a victim of my circumstance, that I owned this. And so kind of fast forwarding to the modern day and what was happening, I realized that I needed to dig out of this hole of this depression, and I needed to focus and really understand what mattered most to me. And this is kind of the genesis of the books, which is, what are the things I needed to really understand what mattered most to me and what I valued? Because I was basing it on society, on how much money I made, what my title was, all of these superficial things that at the end of the day did not define who I was, right? And so once I started to really understand what mattered most to me, I then had to go to the next step, which my book covers, which is, you know, that my mindset creates my destiny. And then the third part, which is, change requires consistent action. And the last part really is about, change is changing who we are. And so I went through this kind of four phase, and then I started teaching it to other CEOs and founders. And that was kind of the premise of how the book came to fruition, because I was like, it's nice that I'm helping people who are already successful become more successful. How can I help more people,
right,
who might not be able to afford executive coaching, masterminds, and all this other stuff? And so that's why I created my book.
Well, let's talk about the book for a second, and then we're going to double back to a couple of things you said. Who is this book for? You mentioned it's for those who can't afford the masterminds and the high price, high ticket executive coaching. But who should be picking up this book and reading it? Or who should be picking up this book and giving it to somebody who might need it?
Really, anyone who wants to find out why they were put on this earth.
Ooh, and more importantly, now we're getting heavy, Len.
And more importantly, how to live those values. Because I think sometimes we might know what we want, but we don't necessarily know how to go about and do it. And we get overwhelmed. Well, so in terms of what I had an aha moment kind of a while ago. So Rodney Williams is a CEO of Diageo Canada. He was one of my first masterminds. And I remember talking to him after the whole Asian American kind of violence that was kind of happening during the pandemic. And Rodney is African American, but he had so much empathy when he was talking about what was happening. I felt it. And I realized that a lot of the folks who read my content, who were attracted to my masterminds, were the empaths, the introverts, the givers of the world. And so like my content usually kind of reaches people who are looking to build a life that has more meaning, people who want to be of service to others, people who want to, who've been kind of beaten down by corporate America or just society. And I mean, those are the people I really talk to. Though, you know, I think when you look at the folks who kind of follow me, kind of, it's a big broad, like broad swath of people.
I love it. And we're going to link it up in the comments. Don't worry, it'll be there. What did you learn about yourself from the process of writing this book?
Well, that I can do hard things.
Take on challenges, and, something new.
Yes, but I also have to lean on my friends. And the issue with givers, we as givers, is that we're not good at taking, we're not good at asking. Mm. But in order for this book to happen, I needed to lean in on my friends. I needed the motivation. And so we were introduced, Adam, by my mutual friend, Mita Malik, you know, who just released her amazing book. But I remember I almost quit. You know, once again, half a dozen, even motivational speakers need motivation. But I almost quit through that process of writing the book because my original publisher had went under. And I was like, oh, and this was 2 years in. I had already finished my first manuscript. They were supposed to go into editing and they went under. And I was like, I'm just going to take a break. So I ended up taking a break for almost a year. And then finally,
but you need that space sometimes. Maybe you needed that time to just kind of reset and invigorate and relight that passion.
Yeah.
I mean, we're creators, so we need to be in the space. I mean, I know I feel with the podcast sometimes where I need to take 3-4 weeks off just to get back into the passion to give you and my audience the best of me. Otherwise, I'm phoning it in.
Yes, no, exactly. But I think that whole thing, you know, I can do hard things and you need to lean into your friends and you have to be able to ask. Because I think, and once again, going back to community, we weren't put on this earth to do it alone. Right. And so in order for us to kind of make impact and change, we do need to depend on others, and we need to be able to be comfortable enough to ask.
I find it interesting that you say that there's really only two ways to transform your life. Would you mind unpacking that for us?
Yeah. So I always say that change or transformation is simple, but it's not easy.
Oh, hell yeah.
There's really only two ways to change your life. It's what you add into your life and what you take away. So what you add and what you take away. And that's why it's so important to really understand what your values are and what's important to you, because life is like a GPS. And if you have a GPS, but you don't have an address, you're going to get lost.
You're going to have to do a
U-turn. Exactly. You're going to drive around in circles. So that address in life is intentionality. Mm-hmm. Really knowing crystal clear what's important to you. For me, it's my family. It's my faith. It's being of service to others. And it is freedom. And I never knew, you know, I never asked that question, what matters most to me? And once I was able to have that intentionality, then it started to be easier in terms of, okay, what are the things that I can add in my life? What can I take away? So having toxic connections mm-hmm. and friends, I need to take that away. I need to add people in my life who feel like sunshine, who make me feel good about myself, who uplift myself, right? In regards to clients that I take, I'm not taking in toxic clients.
Nope.
I just don't,
it's
right?
It's a negative downward spiral.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw this Netflix comedian, but he did a stand-up show. I'm trying to remember what his name is, but there was a part where he was talking about Frank Ocean, the rapper. And he was like, Frank Ocean is so amazing. And I went to him and I was like, Frank, how do you like, you know, you're not in the Hollywood BS and red carpets, and you still release a banger and a successful album every year. And Frank Ocean just was quiet for a second. He said, I just make less money. And sometimes
it's okay.
When you make these tough decisions, you might have to make less money. You might have a
but
client.
But you're doing what's right, that feels good, that aligns with your values and your
exactly.
mission. Exactly. I'll throw another one in there. I agree with everything you're saying here. And I know from my own journey, the change started with accountability. And I think that
yes.
the problem that so many people have is they can't look in the mirror and own their shit. They can't
yeah.
own it. And once you understand what your strengths are and your weaknesses are, that's when you could really say, listen, this is what I'm good at. This is what I'm not so good at. And at a certain stage in life, you need to just double down on your strengths, because that's the
exactly.
direction. That's the direction that you're absolutely leading. But what about the daily habits? And you talk about this a little bit as well too, like the daily habits for transforming those your lives. Like what are some of those micro actions that we could take? Because like, listen, what you're saying is not 100% unique, and it's not unique because it works and it's the truth.
Yeah.
And everyone hears this. We're hearing this. But what are those actionable items that we could really do? Like, how hard is it to cut like a toxic friend? Like there's loyalty, there's history, but you know that person's not good for you, and you don't want to straight up just like ghost them. Like, these are hard conversations and hard things to have. And most of us don't want to hurt other people's feelings, but there comes a time when you need to cut the cord. Like, what are some of these daily actions that people should be taking?
Well, I think when you really align strongly to your values, there are no ifs or buts, right?
And the hard lines.
So for example, I used to be a people pleaser and a yes woman. Mm. Like, yes, let me, you know, how can I help you? Return every calls, return every emails. And when you tap into the why, so for me, one of the most important person in my life is my daughter. And so reframing things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't reply to every email that I get, or, you know, I get thousands of emails each year, just people in my LinkedIn boxes mm-hmm. or social. And I can't respond to
them,
even though I want to. And what I realize is that when I take time, and so what I do is I create these micro learnings and let's talks where people come in. I have one actually in an hour, and they come in. And if you want to come 5 minutes early, you can talk to me.
No.
Right. But I'm not
like office hours,
yeah. doing one-on-ones no. with everyone that reaches out to me.
It's not a business and you don't have the time to scale.
No. But here's the thing. We have a limited amount of time on this earth, right? 77 years is the average lifespan. So if I spend an hour here, I take an hour away from my daughter.
It adds up.
I take an hour away from my family. Mm-hmm. I take an hour from building my business. And so when you understand your value and what's important to you, you have to make it a daily habit with the small things in order for it to become the big thing.
Love that answer.
So for example, taking space. There's a part in the book where I talk about don't live a small, I'm paraphrasing, don't live a small life. Man spread if you need. If you're in New York, you know what you. Right. I'm sure, Adam, you're not a man spreader.
No, I'm very conscious about the width of my legs in public transportation.
Exactly. For those of you who have never been on New York public transportation, but you know, like people are crammed in there, and sometimes men will sit down and just open their legs and just take up two spaces. And so, in one of my quotes in the thing, I was just man spread if you need, and I realized that in a lot of ways, I've tried to be as small as possible and not inconvenience people. So one of the things I used to do was I'm walking through Grand Central and I would just walk in a straight line and I would never move. Because usually I'm 5'2", I'm small. I get bumped around, or I'd have to go around.
Commuting
people
in New York City is a full contact sport. Yeah.
Exactly. But I would just move, and there would be men who just stand in front of me and I wouldn't move, and they would just like swear, mm-hmm. and they would go around.
They would move.
And I would just keep on going. And I would just kind of picture myself as this big burly deer, and I'm just walking through. And so that seems really tiny and small, but just sometimes the small things that we do impact the big things. Another thing is, I remember talking to my mentor, and this is when I was kind of like in the music industry. And I was like, God, why am I, this is before I got married, why am I not dating? And he's like, what do you do every day? I wake up 6 a.m, I work, maybe I eat lunch, then I work again, and then I repeat, and I never leave, you know, the office. And he's like, how do you expect to meet someone if you're never leaving the apartment? So it's the whole thing with changing, like, habits, like, of what you do. And I'm a creature of habit, so I used to always walk the same path. I would eat the same things. So sometimes it's the small daily decisions we make to, let me try sashimi. Let me try something that I've never tried before. And then you do these little things because it's a daily decision that we make. It's not always the big things. A lot of times it's small
micro actions
things
that add up.
They're
daily habits here.
And they add up and they compound, and that becomes you, right? And so I take up space now. I speak up. And I'm a person that used to suffer from social anxiety, public speaking. And now I do it for a living. I'm speaking like overseas. It's like, this is something that I never could have imagined me doing 20 years ago.
And those micro actions, they built your confidence.
Mm-hmm.
They built your own self-awareness, and you've harnessed and found your superpower. So I want to bring it home here. Everyone definitely check out the book. Lan's fantastic, incredible presence on LinkedIn. This is my masterclass, 320 episodes. I get to interview incredible folks like yourself. And listen, anyone that meets us heads my way. I'm actually going to see her in a couple days in Vegas. I'm looking forward to finally meeting her in person. What is the single greatest piece of advice that you've ever received that you take action on every day?
Just start before you're ready. Because that's the only way you get better at anything. Every novice was always a master. You must start somewhere.
You know, it's so funny. I ask that question to every guest along with my next one, and it just start. And it's easier said than done. It is so much easier said than done, but you just have to do it. And it starts with like micro actions. I'll talk about it. I have a to-do list. So my mantra every day is plan your work and work your plan. That's what I repeat every day. When I pivot into recruiting, my mentor Tom Hall said that to me on my first day before I even opened up the computer. And that's what I say to myself every morning, plan your work and work your plan. And one of the things on my little notepad, because I'm old school, I like to write it and see it, was newsletter. And I've literally been putting it off for like 3 weeks to do a new version of my newsletter. And I looked at my calendar yesterday and I saw that I had an hour break. And I was like, right now I'm going to write this newsletter. And I just did it. And now it's done. And it's going out tomorrow and it's going out the next day. And you just do it. And it's that first step is the hardest.
You know what the best advice I got when I was in college was from one of my professors, and it was, to write for the wastebasket. I think we put so much pressure in terms of being perfect. And I don't, action, I mean, for those who kind of follow me on LinkedIn, there are typos. There's times where I'm just walking or I'm like literally.
Yeah. Do you have a thought? You want to get it out there and you want to put it out into the universe?
I'm in my car and I'm waiting for my daughter because I just, you know, picking her up from daycare or whatever it is. And I'm writing a post and there's typos and I'll fix it later.
Whatever.
But if you wait for perfection, it's never going to happen.
Agree.
Right. And so write for the wastebasket. Write that newsletter for the wastebasket.
Yeah. And I just banged it out. Like, it wasn't perfect. I didn't run it through ChatGPT 1,000 times. I didn't give a shit. It's my thoughts. I'm talking about the market. I'm talking about upcoming events. I'm trying to add value with some actionable items. And I just banged it out. And I did a quick grammar check on it. And I set it to schedule.
And that's the other thing I talk about the book was you also have to kind of look at it from a systems perspective. Mm-hmm. So it's your habits, your systems, your community, and also your environment. And when you kind of hit it at those four angles, that's how transformation happens.
I love it. That's fantastic. So let's bring it home here. And my last question, you touched on it. You touched on the things that are most important to you. But if you're a fan of the show and if you listen to any of them, I finish with the strongest question because it's what's most important to me. So Lan, you look back on your life, struggling, immigrating here from Vietnam, watching your parents struggle and then watching your mom do what she needed to do for her family, losing your father at a young age, and then you doing what you needed to do for yourself and your family, and you're pulling yourself up and harnessing that inner tenacity and that drive. And then in turn, sitting here with gratitude for this life, this family that you've created. You've empowered so many people to be better. But Lan, what is your beacon? What is your compass? What is your North Star in life?
My North Star hasn't always been my family. So from my parents to my daughter. I mean, if I look at my mother, I think, and my father, it's just like my journey in terms of trying to become a better person was really started with them. And now kind of moving forward in the next part of my life, it's really being a good role model for my daughter. So that has, my family has always been my North Star.
I love it. And lead by example. Lan, this has been fantastic. We could talk for hours, but the data shows that my audience likes about 44 minutes. And I follow the data. But I'm thrilled to connect with you. We're finally connected. Well, I just sent you a LinkedIn request earlier today. But I'm really looking forward to engaging with you and your community. I hope everyone got a ton of value from this episode. You can certainly check out Lan's book. It'll be out by the time this show comes out. We will link it up in the show notes. Connect with Lan on LinkedIn. Follow, engage. Where else could folks find you? Where else? Did I leave anything out?
No, my YouTube channel. YouTube. And also they can find me on landfan.co.
And those will all be land linked up. Jeez, I am losing it. It's almost time for lunch and the second cup of coffee. But Lan, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your wisdom and your experience. You're a wealth of good stuff. And I want everyone to follow and check you out. And to everyone listening, if this show resonated with you, a review rating goes a long way. Sharing means caring. Remember, you can follow us on all the social media. Check out thepodcast.com for more. Also, check out our YouTube channel, which I'm really trying to grow. Real pain in the ass to get YouTube moving. But I'm trying.
I'll subscribe.
Thank you. I'm really trying to make it work. And remember, most importantly, be good to yourself, be better to others, and catch us next week for another great episode of The Podcast. Take care, everybody.
Wisdom is forever. But for us, it's time to go. Thank you for joining us. Luckily, we'll be back with our next episode soon, jam-packed with more incredible humans. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and sharing. To join the conversation, search The Podcast on LinkedIn. And to catch up on past episodes and more info, please visit www.thepodcast.com.